Jnanavahini Chapter 6. Many people argue that jnana is one of the attributes of Brahman, that it is of the nature of Brahman, a characteristic of Brahman, etc. But such opinions arise only in the absence of actual experience, of actual attainment of jnana. Arguments and discussions multiply when there is no first-hand experience. For the realization of reality is individual, based on revelation to oneself. I declare that jnanam is Brahman, not a mere characteristic or attribute or quality. The Vedas and Shastras announce that Brahman is Satyam, jnanam, and Anandam. Not that Brahman has these and other attributes. When Brahman is known, the knower, the known, and the knowledge all become one. Indeed, Brahman cannot be described as such and such. That is why it is referred to as just Sat. It is. Jnana too is just Sat. No more, no less. The Shrutis use the word Vijnanaghana to indicate Brahman, is it not? That word means the sum and substance of Vijnana, knowledge with a capital K. Only those who are unaware of the Shrutis and the Shastras will aver that Jnana and Brahman are distinct. Jnanam is Brahman. Distinction is impossible. It is a sign of ignorance to posit a difference. All knowledge that is limited by the three gunas is ajnana, that is, false knowledge, not the jnana of the transcendental, which is above and beyond the tamasic, rajasic, and even the sattvic motives, impulses, and qualities. How can such limited knowledge be jnana? Knowledge of the transcendental has to be transcendental too, in an equal measure and to the same degree. It might be said that Brahman has form while jnana is formless, but both are formless in the real sense of the word. The apparent form of Brahman is the result of avidya or ignorance. Form is attributed to Brahman only to serve the needs of the embodied soul during the period of the embodiment. The absolute is reduced to the level of the conditioned because the soul too is conditioned in the body. Not to know that this human interlude is but the conditioned state of the Atma is to be reduced to the dullness of the beast. Jnana is the panacea for all ills, troubles, and travails. This is how the Vedas describe it. To acquire this jnana, there are many paths, and the chief is the path of bhakti, love directed towards God, the path adopted by Vasishtha, Narada, Vyasa, Jayadeva, Gauranga, and other great persons. As the oil is to the flame and the lamp, bhakti is to the flame of jnana. The heavenly tree of the joy of jnana thrives on the refreshing waters of bhakti. Understand this well. It is for this reason that Krishna, who is the personification of prema or universal love, and who is saturated with the quality of mercy, declared in the Gita, "I am known by means of bhakti." Bhaktya mama bijanathi. Why was this declaration made? Because in the path of bhakti there are no hurdles. Young and old, high and low, man and woman, all are entitled to tread it. Who among men are in urgent need of medical treatment? Those who are badly ill, is it not? So too, those who are groping in ajnana are entitled first to the teaching and the training leading to the acquisition of jnana. Why feed those who have no hunger? Why drug those who are not sick? Brahma-Mojnana is the drug for the derealization of the falsely realized, the removal of the fog of misunderstanding or ajnana. It will burn off the dirt that hides the truth. Everyone, whatever the status, class or sex, can win that jnana. If someone states that women are not entitled to it, why then is it mentioned that Shiva taught Vedanta to Parvati? Or how did Kapilacharya, the great yogi, teach the Sankhya system to his mother Devahuti? Or Yajnavalkya, the great rishi, impart the essential principles of Vedantic philosophy to his wife Maitreyi, as mentioned in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad? The Upanishad cannot be false. The scriptures where these facts are mentioned speak only the truth. There is no doubt that sage Mathanga is a great ascetic. Does not the Ramayana declare that he taught the woman Shabari the secret of the sacred doctrine of Brahman? Is that statement false? Coming to this age itself, who does not know that the scholarly wife of Sureshwar Acharya contended with Sankaracharya himself in philosophical discussion of Brahman? So the chief qualification for the path leading to jnana is only the sadhana, the tapas that one is engaged in, not the irrelevant consideration of caste, creed or sex. Leaving all other matters aside, one should concentrate on that sadhana and that tapas. The Lord is accessible and available to all. He is all mercy. No one except the Lord has the authority to declare anyone unfit for the discipline of jnana. If you reflect a little deeper, you will realize that the Lord would not deny anyone the chance to reach Him. To sparks of the same fire or drops of the same sea, how can the flame or the sea deny refuge? The Lord will not refuse or reject. A father with four sons cannot state that one of them has no right to a share in his property. It won't be just or proper. Then what shall be said of the Lord, who is devoid of the slightest tinge of partiality or prejudice, and who is full of mercy? To attribute favoritism to Him is to commit sacrilege. Referring to this question of who is entitled and who is not entitled to Brahma Vidya, Krishna said in the Gita, "I have no favorite, nor do I dislike anyone. Whatever might be the caste, whether the person is man or woman, whoever worships me with faith and devotion will reach me. Nothing can stand in their way. I too will manifest in the hearts of such." Is the Gita therefore meaningless? No, the Gita speaks profound truth. There is another wrong belief current today. It is said that in order to be entitled to the practice of the sadhana for the realization of Brahman, like japa and dhyana, one must adhere strictly to certain modes of daily conduct laid down in tradition and thus attain purity. I do not agree. For medicines are essential only for the bedridden. How can they become hale and healthy without first taking a course of the medicine? To say that a person must be pure and good in following certain codes of conduct before he could tread the path of God is to say that he must be free from disease in order to deserve medical treatment. This is absurd. Purity, goodness, etc. are all the consequences of the journey towards God. They cannot be insisted upon as essential for even starting upon it. The taking in of the drug will gradually induce health and cheer. Health and cheer should not be insisted upon before the drug is even prescribed or supplied. This obvious fact is ignored by many. That is a serious malady indeed. All those suffering from the malady of ajnana or ignorance must read and ponder over the books dealing with the treatment of that disease, namely, the experiences of the great elders in the field of spiritual endeavor. It is only then that they can understand the real state of things. There is also one other secret of success. This too has to be borne in mind. Every course of medical treatment involves some regulation and restriction of diet, movements, habits, and conduct. They should not be neglected or taken lightly. In fact, if the doctor's advice on these matters is not strictly followed, even the costliest or latest or most effective medicine will be ineffective. Consider the persons who underwent the treatment, drugs, restrictions, limitations and all, and successfully emerged from the sick room hale and happy. They are of all castes and ages and of both sexes. Vasishtha was born of a public woman. Narada's mother was a washerwoman. Valmiki belonged to the hunter caste. Vishwamitra was a kshatriya. Matanga was a member of the depressed classes. The inference is that what is important enough is constant meditation on the Lord, not the label of caste or creed. Jnana is the attainment of the feeling of oneness, the realization that there is nothing high or low. That is the true divine principle, the Brahman. A sugar doll has head, neck, arms and limbs, but each part is as sweet as the other. From head to foot, it is one uniform sweetness. There cannot be two types of sweetness. That is why it is said to be not dual, but non-dual. Not dvaita, but advaita. Those who emanate from the Lord's face and those who emanate from his feet are both his children. The realization of this truth is the sign of jnana. There are trees like the jack tree which bear fruit from the root up to the topmost branch. Does the fruit near the ground differ from the fruit on the tallest branch? They are all the same, is it not? Or do they taste differently like distinct fruits? Of course, among the fruits, some may be tender, some unripe, some a little ripe, and some fully ripe. And these may differ in taste too, as is only natural. But never can you find bitterness in the bottom and sweetness in the top or sourness in the middle. Tender, green, and ripe are three stages or three characteristics. So too the four castes are four characteristics, gunas. According to their nature and their activities, the four castes have been ordained. Like the fruit on the same tree, some tender, some green, and some ripe. Men too are considered as of four groups according to their stage of development, which is judged from their actions and character. Those in whose thoughts and behavior the sattva guna predominates are grouped as Brahmins, masters of Vedic law, priests, who are progressing along the path towards Brahman. Those in whom Rajoguna is dominant are referred to as Kshatriyas, the warrior caste. Thus the Shastras have spoken of ingrained qualities as the basis of caste, not otherwise. Why? The Gita itself proclaims that the four castes have been established by the Lord, taking into consideration 1. The dominance of one of the three gunas or traits, and 2. The practice of karma like japam, dhyanam and other disciplinary duties. Though born as a Sudra, the worker caste, a person does attain Brahminhood through Brahmanward struggle and sadhana. Though born as a Brahmin, if that ideal and the effort to attain it are not found, the person becomes a Sudra. Anushthan and Nishtha, that is, conduct and discipline. These two are the criteria, the deciding factors. The inner Atmic principle is the same in all. It knows no caste or class or conflict. To realize that the self is beyond all these subordinate categories, bhakti is the first requisite. Bhakti merges in jnana and becomes identified with it. Bhakti ripens into jnana, so do not speak of them as different. At one stage it is called bhakti, at a later stage we refer to it as jnana. Once it is sugarcane, later it is sugar. Through bhakti, the jiva is transformed into Shiva. Or rather, it knows it is Shiva, and the jiva idea disappears. To posit oneself as jiva, that is ajnana. To know oneself as Shiva, that is jnana.